Our first speaker this evening is Pastor Alvin Berry, who for 2 years has been Executive Secretary of our Synod's Board of Missions. I guess more specifically, its divisions of Missions and Special Ministry, right? If we want to get the full title there. Pastor Berry began as a Thiensville graduate. His first 10 years in the parish ministry were spent in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, and then in two different locations in southern Minnesota. After that, for 8 years in the Iowa West District, he was the Missions and Stewardship Counselor. And then, as I said before, for the last 2 years, he has been heading up our Synod's Division of Missions and Special Ministries. We're especially glad, Pastor Berry, that you're with us this evening because you can talk to us from personal experience, having made several visits personally to some of our far-flung mission fields. So without further ado, Pastor Berry.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure to be with you here this evening. Especially a pleasure to be able to visit with you and talk with you concerning the mission explosion that one sees happening around the entire globe. In selecting the theme, Mission Explosion, I suppose the word mission right away comes out, but the word explosion is one that leaves with people sort of differing reactions as they hear that particular word. I think the word explosion is an action word in most of our thoughts. It tells us that something is happening. And usually when you hear the word explosion, I think we're more prone to think of a negative aspect rather than a positive. We think of something that is being destroyed rather than something that is being constructed and going forward. But I believe that explosion also carries with it a positive thrust. One thinks of the explosions that go on in the motor of your car as you find yourself starting up the motor and starting toward a meeting such as this. Explosions that in a controlled process give power and momentum to a vehicle to move it forward. Earlier this afternoon when I was in Minneapolis, we were going through a certain section of the city and they were exploding certain rocks out of the way for a new highway that was being constructed. And I couldn't help but think that the explosions that were happening at that particular point in time, the dynamiting that was being done, was a constructive thing, in that it was making possible a road that would then make possible the travel and the moving of people through the city of Minneapolis. Well, when we talk about a mission explosion that is happening around the world, I think the word explosion also says the same thing. Something is definitely happening. I do not believe that it is a negative thing that is happening. I believe it is a very positive thing, in that as one takes a look around the globe, we see all types of new opportunities, both within our own country and around the world, where God is opening doors of opportunity for us and all Christendom to communicate in an increasing amount the good news in Jesus Christ to other people. As you entered this evening, we gave to you several sheets of paper, and I would like to speak on the basis of the outline, the first page. And as we work our way through it, I'd sort of like to cover four particular areas. We call them the four sections of our Division of Missions: world areas, North American, personnel services, and then also talk concerning administration. And in these four areas, I believe I can point to some of the key issues that will be coming before the constituency of our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod when it finds itself going to Dallas this summer, there to hold its convention. The first thing that I would like to talk about is in the area of world areas or world missions. Africa mission expansion. If you've been reading The Reporter and other publications, you've noticed of late that we've been talking a great deal concerning an expansion of the work of our mission operation in Africa. At the present time, we are working in two countries in Africa. We are working in the country of Nigeria, and we are working in the area of Ghana. The work in the country of Nigeria was the first to be started, and the work in the country of Ghana was the second, so naturally, the operation in Nigeria is considerably larger. But as you look also in other places around the world, you have more than likely heard that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is presently working in 31 countries around the world, of which in 19 countries we find ourselves with what we call expatriate mission personnel. These would be U.S. citizens who have been selected by the Board for Missions to be serving our church in an overseas capacity as a missionary, an agriculturalist, a medical, an educator, or something of that nature. And so with this scope of 31 countries that we are working in, I think it is very safe to say that we have a good-sized world mission operation going as a church body. But we also have to be honest enough to admit that the majority of the new work and the new expansion that has taken place over the past decade and a half has not been in any new countries. But over the past two decades, the majority of the expansion that has taken place are in the countries where we are currently working, such as in Brazil, the Philippines, and so forth. I don't really know what the reason was for that, because I find it exceptionally difficult to believe that during the past two decades, God has opened no new doors where we could enter new countries. But nevertheless, the fact stands that we have not entered any new countries during that period of time. I believe the Lord has a way, nevertheless, of jarring a church body to a greater awareness in missions when there is a tendency to sort of sit on its laurels and not move ahead. And the West Africa situation that will be confronting our church body in session in Dallas is a good example of that. We had the Brazil district, or the Brazil church body, approaching us already about 6 years ago or 5 years ago, saying we believe that there is additional work that should be started in Africa. The country that the Brazil district referred to specifically was the country of Mozambique. If you take a look at the map, you'll notice that Mozambique would be located to the right lower section of the map of Africa. It's one of the two countries that has a population figure listed on it of 7,600,000. And in the highlands of Mozambique, between the borders near the borders of Tanzania and Zambia, there was located approximately 2 million people who had not as yet heard the gospel of Jesus Christ. A visitation team was sent over to see exactly what the situation was. We sort of took a look at it. We at the same time took a look at another country that had brought to our attention, Angola, with 5,800,000 people in it. The picture in Mozambique was different from that in Angola, in that Angola was divided sort of into three tiers of Christianity or nationalization in its country. But the sad thing about it all, as one of our overseas missionaries said, is that Missouri did what so many Christian denominations do. A door opened in Mozambique. The Lord beckoned us to move. We said we've got to take a second look at this and a third look and study it. And while we took a second and a third look and studied it, the door opened and the door closed, and we were not able to move into Mozambique. I suppose the Lord did that to maybe sort of briar us a little bit for something better that he had in mind. Because following that, it just so happened that our attention was then redirected to West Africa, up along the Ivory Coast, to the countries of Liberia, the Ghana, the Togo, the Cameroon, and in that particular area. We had elected to our board at the last convention a man by the name of Dr. Benjamin Dennis, who himself is a native Liberian. Now, whenever you hear that a person is a native Liberian, I think there's a tendency to believe, you know, that he is still carrying a bow and arrow with him. That's not really the case. Dr. Benjamin Dennis, who is a member of our board, has two PhD degrees, one in sociology and one in anthropology, and teaches at the University of Michigan. And this particular man has been brought to faith in Jesus Christ and sees himself, or really saw himself, called by God to challenge his church, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, to move. Another visitation team was then sent over to Africa. And we have become aware of the fact now that there are two large sections in which we can begin new work. We can begin work in Togo. We can also find ourselves beginning work in Sierra Leone and Liberia, but especially among the Mende people in Liberia. So that as a result of this, The visitation team recommended to the board, and we studied again and again, that we begin a new area of endeavor in Liberia among the Mende people starting this year. So that one of the things that will come before the Dallas Convention will be the request from the Department for Missions that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod walk through what we see as a wide open door, planting the gospel in a new area with a new group of people, recognizing that as a result of this, it will be more than likely opening other doors, perhaps in Togo, surely over in Sierra Leone and other places. But equally important that the Dallas Convention also give its blessing to and encouragement to expanding the work in the two countries where we are working, which would be Nigeria and Ghana. To my way of thinking, the most important resolution or memorial that will come from the Department for Missions before the Dallas Convention is that specific resolution. And I would hope that it would come early in the convention so that we as delegates assembled in Dallas will recognize what the purpose and the thrust of our Christian faith is, to be used by God in carrying the good news to others around the world. The second thing that we've listed under world areas is the Lutheran World Mission Planning Consultation. You more than likely have noticed it's on the Roman numeral 1B, which would be the on your main outline there. Maybe you noticed in some of the publications that came through the reporter and articles that appeared there, information concerning a Lutheran World Mission Planning Consultation. I think that one has to, first of all, say what it was and why it happened. It was a meeting that was held in Hong Kong to which the presidents of all of our overseas partner churches, together with their mission leaders, were invited to come to share information in the area of missions, to plan together, to consult together, to discuss a strategy in world missions that would involve all of us and affect all of our church bodies. We have come into a changed situation in world missions. The changed situation is essentially this, that with the strong emphasis on nationalization on the part of overseas countries, with the strong emphasis on self-identity, these countries are very sensitive to anything that appears as paternalism on the part of some Western power, or as they call it, European-oriented nation. Consequently, we as a church body are now relating to, I believe, a different picture and mission than we did even one or two decades ago. Now, we're all aware of the fact that about four years ago, there were several individuals of our Department of Missions who found it necessary to submit their resignations. And this sort of put the mission department into a certain amount of turmoil and stress and strain. And I think that all of us, with a real note of sadness, never like to see that happening within a department. But I do believe that when history finally looks back to assess what happened at that point in time, the impartial historian is going to be able to say that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, because of a crisis, was able to make a decade leap in world mission thinking. In other words, we were thrust into a situation where without a staff, as it were, we found ourselves having with a new staff to relate to a situation so that we, in our thinking as a church body, moved at least one full decade in thought and recognized that no longer could we deal with overseas partner churches as though they were our children, but rather we must now deal with them as partners with all that that really implies and means. And in visiting with some of the mission men of other major denominations, I do believe that when the history books finally assess the situation, we will have made at least a decade leap in mission thinking. Consequently, we find ourselves as a church body now relating to our churches in a different way. Dr. Preuss and myself and Pastor Otto Hinsey, our Secretary for World Areas, were the three Lutheran Church Missouri Synod representatives attending this meeting in an official capacity. There were two representatives from every other partner church. There was an absolute note of equality as we sat at the table and we talked together and planned together. There was a complete awareness that we in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod were not trying to call the shots or be paternalistic or use financial power to force our way, but rather that we had now accepted them as partners, full right partners, in an operation of which we all had a share. And so I believe this is sort of an exhibit A. What happened in Hong Kong is an exhibit A of what we will see in the years directly ahead in world mission planning. There will be a greater desire for those churches to relate president to president, from their president to the president of our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. There will be a greater desire on the part of these churches to relate to the mission department as an evangelistic outreach type of agency. And they will in turn expect a certain amount of integrity, but I think equally important, we in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod must not forget our own identity. It will be very important that we recognize that we are a church body and that we have mission goals and mission aspirations and that there are things that we want to see happen as a result of our involvement in mission, so that we do not become a rubber stamp supporting others' endeavors, but as a powerful church body giving partnership direction to the other churches that are involved. And so as we deal with various issues at the Dallas Convention, without a doubt we'll be dealing not with a bunch of children who are growing up, but we will be dealing with overseas partner churches in a completely new relationship. Now, I should tell you that we could spend a lot of time here tonight reporting country by country on the various countries and the work that is being done. There's so many interesting statistics. I think it's nice to be able to tell you that of the money that is channeled into our department, about $10 million, that 70.1% of that is now being shipped overseas for overseas world activities. I think it's important to take that little figure and stick it in the side of one side of the memory bank up here. 70.1% is going for the overseas expansion that is coming into our department. But I think equally important is to acknowledge and at least to say answer one of the questions that was in the brochure that was prepared for these meetings. I think the question was, has some of the unrest hurt? Has some of the unrest with the LCMS hurt our overseas activities? Well, I don't think unrest ever helps. And I believe that if there is anything that I have noted as a result of the unrest and maybe some of the problem harassment of our synod, that if anything, it has resulted in a dual distrust. Namely, that the overseas partner church is then consequently prone to distrust both accusor and accusee. And so consequently, our approach has been essentially this: to work with the overseas partner churches in a very open, in a very direct way, in a very honest way, to not be highly critical, condemnatory, but rather to be positive, forward-looking, and creative. And I believe that under the blessings of God's Spirit, we see things happening attitudinally on the part of these overseas partner churches as a result of that approach in working with them and dealing with them. So one of the things we'd want to be sensitive of as we move into Dallas will be namely to recognize that we do have partner churches and how important that is. And another resolution then that will automatically come before the convention will be one to recognize the Hong Kong Synod as a partner church of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod with all that that implies. I'd like to move on then to North American missions. I think one of the things that our North American exec again and again says, and it's kind of fun to have him aboard, is remember, North America is a part of the world. It's very easy, you know, to sort of take world missions and talk about world missions as being out there and forget that a dynamic, tremendous amount of mission activity because we are a North American church body, is automatically in the Lutheran Church in North America. We have, over the past few years now, then consequently experienced, I believe, a new change in North American mission tactics. We went, following the Second World War, through a cycle where we did a great deal of planting of new congregations. And then, almost like in the world picture, we stopped planting new congregations. You could talk to the president of the Southern California District, where people were moving in after every Rose Bowl game almost by the thousands, and you ask, how many new congregations have you started or you plan to start next year? And he would say, one or maybe two. You would look at areas in the southern part of the United States, down in the Florida, Georgia area, down in Texas or what have you, and you would ask again, how many congregations do we plan to start? You'd hear the answer, one or two. We had stopped as a church body planting new churches, which is a very important part of North American mission activity. 2 years ago, we planted 20 such churches. When you stop to think that a 3 million member church body only planted 20 new churches, that's not very much church planting. But it kind of gives me a great deal of joy to tell you that last year now we planted 77 new churches, and that next year it is our anticipation to exceed that and to cross the 100 church mark in the planting of new churches here in North America. Now, many of these will be, I think, in the coastal regions, what we call the seacoast areas, where the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod sort of finds itself moving into virgin timber, and where there is a lot of opportunity for expansion. Dallas will be talking about church growth, and as it talks about church growth, there are certain fears that will arise. District presidents will say, well, why do you plant new congregations when we have 500 vacancies the way it is? Where are you going to get the manpower? The financier will say, good grief, I hear that there's a $2.75 million gap between anticipated receipts and the budget in the present year, and you're moving ahead? The logistics man will say, wouldn't it be better to make a 10-year moratorium in mission expansion and sort of get caught up with everything and then move ahead, kind of trusting at that point that we're in a better position to move? It seems to me that all those thoughts have to be taken into consideration. But in the last analysis, we must be the people of God who come to the edge of the Red Sea and expect the Lord to part the waves so we can move ahead. We must see our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod as a spiritual group of God's people who, irregardless of financial or manpower logistics or whatever you may say, are determined to move ahead. Maybe it'll be through a complete redeployment of the use of pastors in Midwestern states. In many cases, I believe that we have very poorly placed our pastoral representation across the Midwestern part of the United States. Undoubtedly, there must be a heavy recruitment program to recruit an additional number of men and women going into full-time church service. But I believe we also have to move faster, and that we will have to come up with some kind of an approach. And the board is placing this before the Senate in convention, encouraging that there will be some type of an established process whereby a greater number of lay people with training will be able, on short-term lay evangelistic training programs, to serve our church as it moves in missions. Well, in addition to moving into all of the new congregations that we hope to plant, in fact, I kind of joshed with a man in the ALC. I was visiting with him the other day, and he has $31 million that he doesn't know what to do with. And he said, we got that money, and we don't know what to do with it. And I told him that I could help him out very easily. And even if he didn't want to send it all, at least $10 million he could ship on down to St. Louis for us. I don't think he's going to send it, though. But I would say that one of the other things then that immediately comes in North American missions, and you will hear a great deal of this at Dallas, is ministry to ethnic groups. Dallas, because it is the 100th centennial year of black ministry, will put a great deal of emphasis on ministry to the black. But you'll notice on the outline there are three groups that we need to give very direct attention to: the black, the Hispanic, and the American Indian. And I'd like to tell you that some of the things that will be proposed to Dallas. At the present time in the United States, in the black community, there are 25 million black Americans living in the United States. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, of the three Lutheran bodies, has done more ministry among the black than any of the three bodies. But even in saying that statement, I must immediately go on to say, but what even we have done is just a drop in the bucket. Some of the problems that presently confront us is that approximately one-third of the pastoral leadership of the black pastoral leadership of our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod will retire within the next 2 years. And in addition to this, there is this complete desire on the part of the black constituency of our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod to move forward. And so in an attempt to meet that particular need, already at Anaheim, the Anaheim Convention instructed that a black mission model task force be established that would study the ministry needs, the funding needs, the educational needs of the black community, and come back to the Dallas Convention with its recommendations. Some very far-reaching recommendations will be offered to the Dallas Convention for consideration. And perhaps the most specific area that will be involved will be the increased training of a larger number of black workers and the establishing of a larger number of black congregations ministered to by black people. But I think equally important is your Hispanic community. At the present time, as we said, there were 25 million blacks. There are 18 million Hispanics in the United States, falling into three different categories: the Cuban, the Latin American, and the Central American Hispanic who has come into our states. The picture even in Texas is changing. By 1980, in Texas, over one half of the surnames, the last names of people, will be Hispanic. You try to visualize that if by 1980, half of the names in Texas are going to be Hispanic, what a mission open opportunity this places before us and all Christian denominations. And by 1985, it is anticipated that we will be the fourth largest speaking Spanish nation in the world. We are reaching into new dimensions of types of life, the likes of which we have never experienced in the past. And so a Hispanic task force has also come and will be coming before the convention with recommendations that will be offered for very serious consideration. An American Indian task force has just started, and so its recommendations will not be offered. It would seem to me that there are two dangers that we could very easily fall into at the Dallas Convention. One would be what I would call tongue-in-cheek type of resolutions. Resolutions where, sort of sticking tongue-in-cheek, you say, yeah, we're going to take care of that. And the other is the danger of promising something which we as a church body cannot live with and cannot produce. Both of those would be equally unacceptable to any future expansion of black or Hispanic ministry. And so somewhere we're going to have to walk between those two tight lines of tongue-in-cheek promising things that we have no intention of doing and promising the sun, the moon, and the stars which we know we can't produce. And walking between that as a convention group, come up with a realistic program in ministry to the two largest ethnic groups in our United States. Now I could talk quite a bit to you about the campus ministry thrust. There will be a campus ministry document that will be presented, but essentially it's a document that has been approved by all the districts. It's been approved by the Board for Missions and so on down the line. There's no real, I think, important things that will be brought to the attention of the convention in that area. But I do want to talk about personnel services. When we talk about personnel services in the Department for Missions, we are talking about people care. You see that on your outline, the first page, Roman numeral 3, people care. The personnel services of the Department of Missions has four duties. One is to serve our missionary personnel who are already overseas. Two is to identify new missionary personnel to go to overseas positions. Three is to train new missionary personnel for overseas positions. And four is to bring national leaders of overseas churches to the United States and give them additional training here in a program called STAPOC, which is Special Training Assistance Program for Overseas Churchmen. Now, one of the things that we sense very keenly is that we now have, from our overseas partner churches, requests for all types of new personnel. The requests that were originally sent to us as a board for missions represented a request for 48 new workers this year alone. That is almost a mountain of workers compared to what we had in years gone by. We were sending maybe two or three or something like that. And all at once now, we turn to the overseas partner churches and we say to these partner churches, we're ready to move in missions. We've got a church body that is really concerned in getting the gospel out. We're ready to send additional workers if you want them. And now these overseas partner churches turn and they say, okay, and they send us 48 requests. We trim the 48 requests down to 44 requests according to our standard of priority. And in the next trimming, we now trim them down to 30 requests and say, but these 30 people we promise you in 1977. Now, I believe our integrity in world missions is very much on the line. If we as a church body promise to our overseas partner churches after saying we're ready to move in mission, that we are willing to supply them with 30 new workers, 48, 44, 30, and then do not produce and send those workers, I have a fear that many overseas partner churches will say, you're just playing games. But to me, equally important, they ask for workers because right now doors are open. I'm sure you've heard your pastors tell you that for some time now we have not been able to get additional workers into India. The doors had been closed in India and it just wasn't possible to get additional workers in. Every time a man retired, we had to reduce our mission staff over there. But now all at once, by a fluke in the government and a change in the Nehru government and Gandhi and all that, all at once the door opens and it's possible for us to send new workers into India. They request 8. We trim the number to 6. And now will we produce the 4 that we finally said we were sending? Well, at the last Board for Missions meeting, we called and have received acceptance on the part of 2 individuals to go overseas to India, and we praise God for these 2 families that will be leaving this summer for work in India. But I think the thing that is needed is that for all of us, not just the mission department, but the laity of the church, the pastors, to take a look at that listing of names that I included in here. That entire listing of names where it says in West Africa, among Liberia, we need an evangelistic missionary, a medical doctor, a lay missionary, an Old Testament prof, an evangelistic missionary, a nurse tutor. To take a look at that, because it's not just going to happen by itself. And somehow we as a church body are going to have to recognize that we together must submit names, pull together our ranks, and send these type of workers overseas. I guess I'd have to also say that we have changed our training program. The training program for our overseas missionaries this year will be conducted here at Concordia Seminary. It's a 10-week training program that we have. And I don't know where it will be the next year, but at least in order to meet the needs of this expanded group of people, we have listed it here at the seminary for this present summer. Now, so we preserve at least 15 minutes for some questions. I'm going to go on to administration. The last point is administration. I can just tell you that we'll be reporting to the Dallas Convention that we have restructured our staff and we have gone from 18 staff people, men staff, down to 10. That is quite a large reduction in staff. We have gone from 25 secretaries down to 15 secretaries and workers in the library for the blind. And the rationale behind this is not that the work has vanished, but rather to use to a greater extent a purchase of service of people in the field to fulfill staff duties that previously were done by North American or world area staff. We will present to the convention under 4B a BFM policy study and development manual that Dr. Paul Herboth has been working on for a great deal of time, and that will have to be ratified by the convention. We will talk about medical missions. We have had a secretary of medical missions in the past, and we're coming to the convention with a reworked plan for handling medical missions, at least until the task force on structure and bylaws has done its work, and we'll be asking that the convention deal with the subject of medical missions. And I think equally we will also be coming to the convention and asking that our convention recognize the tremendous role which agencies such as the International Lutheran Layman's League, the LWML, the Lutheran Braille Workers, and other such organizations, the tremendous asset which they have been to us in the mission department and to a church in carrying forward the mission program of our synod. I think God has given us a mission command, but equally important, he's given us a mission promise. It's interesting to me as I read through the New Testament, God never commands his church to move forward in missions without very closely to it in the same portion of the scripture promising that he will bless. And to my way of thinking, the thinking of the Board for Missions and its staff, the Lord is calling us forward in mission. We feel that the Dallas Convention can say much to the world, to this constituency of the Lutheran Church, to ourselves by saying, Lord, we hear and we're willing to walk. And by the way in which we deal with the various subjects that come before the convention under the division of missions, we will be showing to the Lord, but I think equally, if not even more important to ourselves, that we are a church body that is not just concerned in keeping the word pure, but that we are a church body that is concerned in sharing with the world a pure gospel in Jesus Christ. And maybe we can open up for some questions. I think we got about 15 minutes. I always find those questions more interesting than my presentation, to be real honest with you. So I enjoy that part better. All right, I saw a hand back here. Yes, sir.
I have two questions.
All right. All right. The first question was about Mozambique. What caused the doors to go closed? Yes, it was communistic influence that caused those doors to go closed. It was interesting that the Portuguese Roman Catholic Church is doing most of the work along the border. The Wisconsin Synod and two large mission organizations are doing quite a bit of work up in the northern part. And in the center section was this area where they told us, the Roman Catholics told us and the others told us, you know, get in there, move in, now's the time, move. Well, we studied it and the door closed, but it was closed because of political pressures, even as the door in the case of Angola closed because of political pressures. But the interesting thing is, I received a letter about a week ago from a missionary of another denomination over in Angola that I had been corresponding with, and he said, we are convinced that the doors in Angola will be opening again soon. So don't give us up as lost. Be ready to move. The second question was relative to the mission affirmations and the status of the mission affirmations. The mission affirmations, I think, picked up quite a bit of static at one time, and for that reason, the CTCR were asked to take those mission affirmations and to study them very carefully and to elaborate on them. We still use the mission affirmations as a part of our department. We feel that the work that the CTCR did is to clarify them. I was previously scheduled to make a presentation to the other three Lutheran bodies over in Kansas City later this year in October, and I was going to use the mission affirmations as the basis for my presentation of Missouri's stand in mission. I believe it's like any other set of affirmations. We have social welfare affirmations, we have evangelism affirmations, and we have the mission affirmations. And you tell me how much you've heard about the social welfare affirmations adopted by our Synod and Convention, and how much you've heard about the evangelism affirmations adopted by our Synod. Not very much, right? We seem to be a great church body for adopting affirmations, and then, you know, then we lay them to the side. But we still use them as guidelines and as springboards for doing our work. So I think that's pretty much where they are. Yeah. Yes, the lady here, please.
I have three quick questions. One about the ministry.
All right. The what?
The quality,
okay. Okay. With regard to campus ministry, the first question was this: what about the quality of campus ministry? Maybe I would change the word to the direction of campus ministry. It seems to me that in the past we have had a little bit of a temptation as a church body to give the direction in campus ministry to that of being a retaining of the German Lutheran people that we sent to the campus. In other words, keep them with the faith. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. You know, that's very commendable. But we have not given as much attention as we feel we should have to using young people on the campus in evangelistic outreach to others on those campuses. We personally feel there is no better way of keeping a person faithful to the Word than to use him in winning others to Jesus Christ. So we'd like to feel that campus ministry in the years directly ahead, our campus ministry program will more and more take on a thrust similar to that of the campus crusade, namely of young people, not just we're going to protect you so nothing goes wrong with you while you're on the campus, but when you're on the campus, we want you to be a witness to Jesus Christ. And I think that then will become quality campus ministry. Okay, getting the literature of the overseas foreign countries. The main thing that we do here is the change that has taken place is that we are trying to a great extent to use the literary firms of the countries themselves to take care of publishing and preparing those materials. Some of the materials that we prepared here, quite honestly, it costs too much to get them over there. And the other thing, they're just too well done. You take something that's too well done and give it to a person that is in a society or a culture that is somewhat less high quality, you know, in educational standards than us, and that high quality material almost becomes a threat to them. We find also that if we allow the foreign countries, the missionaries, the writers there, to prepare the materials, they feel a greater ownership in those materials than if we try to do it here. In some countries now, it is not even possible for us to ship in printed materials. So that will be the direction going there. As to the agencies, undoubtedly Lutheran Bible Translators is another one, and I suppose I'll bet if I stood here and thought and named 22, somebody out there could think of a 23 that I missed. But we hopefully are going to be able to try to say to our church body that through the years, these organizations, and currently these organizations, are a tremendous, valuable force to our church and blessing in evangelistic work around the world. We really feel it needs to be said. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. With regard to the recruiting of young men, the first question was what's being done to recruit young men for black ministry. With regard to the recruiting of young men for black ministry, Dr. Richard Dickinson, who serves Resurrection Lutheran Church in Chicago, has been on a purchase of service basis from the Department of Missions and from Synod this past year, doing work for the Centennial, Black Centennial Group, and also for the Black Mission Model Task Force. He has been quite instrumental, but I think we recognize that one of the things that needs to be done is to identify, I don't know whether it's a full-time person or a part-time person who will be able to assist us in recruiting young blacks for ministry in our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I would say at this point in time, the tough road that we have to hoe is this. That with all of the equal opportunity laws, in effect, in the area of employment, the young black who is in college has many people, many companies that are really jumping after him to get him in order, you know, to keep this ratio that the government has set up within various firms. And so it makes it equally difficult for us to go and to gain these type of people. So I think what Pastor Dickinson is proposing, or I know what is being proposed to the Synod in convention, is that we come up with a shortened, much shortened form of educational seminary study for the black pastors so that we will be able to generate a larger number of them. But in the last analysis, I don't think there's any better person for identifying someone for the black pastoral ministry than that brother's pastor himself. I'm sure that the recruitment man here at Concordia Seminary would say the best recruitment person he has is a parish pastor who has his eyes open looking for someone and saying, hey there, Joe, why don't you go into the ministry? That's the one. Okay. Then with regard to how many, I don't think I can give you the answer to that. It's always nice to have one of those questions that you can't give the answer to. But we are working at it. I was on the St. Paul campus this afternoon. And I was thrilled to see almost, I think it was 20 to 25 black American, young black Americans on the St. Paul campus, boys and girls, in training for pastoral teaching and ministry of our church. And that was really an exciting thing for me to see on the St. Paul campus. Okay, some more questions. These are good. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, yes. All right.
Right.
The comment was with regard to the unrest within our own church body and the effect that this has on the overseas partner churches. And I hope that in whatever I said, I didn't leave the impression that there was no effect, because there's bound to be an effect. I think the effect is felt even more keenly by the expatriate missionary personnel than perhaps by the national, because the expatriate missionary personnel is thousands of miles away from home, and so it almost is as though when this type of information comes, it's like someone shouting in his ears with a megaphone. I think another thing that I've noticed is watching the expatriate mission personnel, and maybe you didn't have that problem, but one of the disservices that well-meaning relatives can perform to such dedicated workers overseas is to write and say, hey there, you know, the grandchildren are growing up, we miss you, maybe there's so many vacancies in our particular state, you know, gosh, we hate to be so far away from the kids. I know how grandparents must feel at times like that, and yet by the same token, I would say that that's a disservice to an expatriate missionary personnel, I sense, you know, to try to make them, they tend to make them homesick at times. But as we work with our partner churches, I think that more and more I hear them saying to us concerning the unrest, the national leaders saying to us concerning the unrest, statements like this: We hurt with you, we feel for you, but we also recognize that we have enough problems right here to have our eyes on, that we're not going to export or import your problems to us. And I hope that we can more and more reduce our problems so that they can focus their attention on their challenges close by. Maybe we got a chance for one more question, a shorty, and then it's time for coffee break, I believe. Okay? Yes, sir. Yes, I think that we would agree that among the campus community, the pastors of the campus community, there are several who have been quite critical of Synod. I also find, you know, a goodly number that have been very supportive, too, of our Synod. And I believe that the way of dealing with these particular problems is only through sitting down and ministering to the good brother and talking with them and working with them. But I, too, would concur that some of the best pastors that we have, I believe, should occupy campus positions, because they are influencing a large percentage of our young people for many, many years to come. Well, thank you very much.